Hi, you're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, and it's the 26th of April 2012 in Sydney, Australia. For those of you listening in the United States, it's still the 25th of April. I hope everyone has had a great week. We have just had a unique Australia-New Zealand public holiday here called Anzac Day to commemorate the sacrifice, one might say the ritual slaughter, the ritual sacrifice of about 8,000 Australian troops in the First World War, which has become an institution in Australia now. The holiday has obviously been here for a very long time, and the holiday and the kind of commemoration that goes with it goes back to World War One. But one interesting thing to observe about that is in the last 10 to 15 years, it's actually really picked up a lot of interest. And we now have large numbers of Australian backpackers going to Gallipoli in Turkey, where the actual massacre occurred, and basically having a dawn vigil there. So why is that happening? Something to do with the age that we're living in. People seem to be now commemorating war in a more intense way. It's a disturbing trend in my view. The sacrifice of those soldiers was completely pointless, had no military objective that was worthwhile, and yet it is one of the central pillars of Australian tradition and Australian on the Australian calendar and in the Australian War Memorial. Anyway, in today's show, let's just roll through what we're going to be covering in today's show. My name's Hereward Fenton. Truth News Australia gets into a lot of world news and a lot of Australian news. And today we'll be covering a good deal of Australian news as the Australian government steams towards either a complete collapse and a complete loss of power, or if everything goes according to their plan, the carbon tax, which would be brought into full force in July this year. Now, the government is under extreme pressure at the moment in Australia. So we will be talking about that, and we'll be talking somewhat about the carbon tax, which is massively unpopular in this country and which is one of the main reasons why the government is set ready to collapse. I'll also be going through some other news related to Australia. I have a number of stories here about, still related to climate change, about the ABC running a program on a show known as Q&A, which is kind of one of those audience participation programs where they try to gauge the public opinion. And they'll be doing a slot on that tonight, actually, in Australia. We'll be talking a little bit about Julian Assange, who recently, his lawyer tried to come to Australia and was actually discovered that she was on the Department of Homeland Security no-fly list, and she was actually just trying to fly from the UK to Australia. And she was stopped, and she did manage eventually to get here, but she encountered a lot of difficulty. We'll be talking to you about some more news in regard to airport scanners, and it's the body scanners, the naked body scanners, which give you gives the operator a complete 3D pornographic view of the human body, and their imminent introduction into Australia. And in the second hour, I'll be getting Rochelle McCready on. Rochelle is a lawyer and a regular contributor to Truth News Radio Australia. And she came on last time to talk about ACTA, and it's the anti-counterfeit amendment. Gee, I can't even remember what it stands for. She will tell us what it stands for. It's a new legislation which is being brought in relation to a global treaty which Australia has signed onto, which is aimed at reducing copyright fraud. But as we've seen with many of these legislations, it is actually just a backdoor for all kinds of government control, interference, and surveillance. In the final half hour of the show, Josh Jackson will be coming on, and we're actually going to talk a bit about airports. I recently went overseas, and Josh travels a lot, and we want to actually talk about, we want to get into the question about what is an airport, you know, and why is there so much difficulty and so much tyranny going on in relation to people's travel through airports. And we want to just look at what an airport is, what it does, what they've been set up to do over time, and see if we can kind of deconstruct some of the preconceptions that people have about why we need this sort of massive security infrastructure in airports, and why traveling on a plane should be really considered any different to just getting on a bus or a train or getting in your car or even just walking down the street. And, of course, there's a whole lot of sides to that, some of it being government corporate partnerships and the way airports are actually run, some of it being, you know, the security gold rush to supply technologies and techniques to screen people in the wake of 9/11, and some of it being the predatory marketing that's actually used in airports to basically siphon money out of your wallet as you get onto the plane. So that's quite an interesting subject. But let's turn now to the current hot news in Australia, which is the issue of the Speaker of the House in Parliament, Peter Slipper, who is under an immense pall of allegations in regard to misconduct and criminal activity in regard to misuse of taxi vouchers, sexual harassment of staff, and he is now under a high degree of pressure from people within the parliament, MPs such as Tony Windsor, to stand down as speaker. Now, why is this important? Well, I'm going to give you my perspective as to why this is important and why indeed the whole scandal is even occurring. Peter Slipper was appointed to the Speaker's chair in late 2011 after the previous sitting Speaker unexpectedly resigned. Now, Peter Slipper at that time, and had been for more than 10 years, a Liberal National Party member. That's the Conservative Party in Australia. And he had been a member of that party, and straight ahead, no questions there about who he was and what his loyalties were. However, around about towards the middle of last year, he was offered the deputy speaker position by the Labor government. And he actually accepted that. Now, the deputy speaker obviously is a stand-in role in case the speaker becomes ill. Now, he was offered that by the Labor government, and he actually accepted the offer, but it was considered by his fellow party members as somewhat of a betrayal of the party, in that he was offered the position by the Labor Party, and by taking the seat, he would forfeit his vote. And of course, we have a situation where the parliament is actually on a knife edge in Australia. There's a very, very slim majority that the government currently has in parliament. And if they lose that majority, then they could potentially lose government very easily. Now, by appointing Peter Slipper into the deputy speaker's position, he could potentially have become speaker, as he did. And the leader of the LNP, Tony Abbott, the leader of the opposition, chastised Peter Slipper over that at that time. Now, later on in the year, the Labor sitting member suddenly resigned, and Peter Slipper entered the position of speaker. Now, what this actually resulted in was a situation where the Labor Party had two extra votes that it previously didn't have on the floor of Parliament, because the sitting Speaker went back to Parliament where he could now vote, and Peter Slipper, the Liberal member, went into the Speaker's chair where he could now not vote. So that's two votes gained to the government, which makes their grip on power just that little bit stronger. Now, this was seen at the time and reacted to quite severely by the Liberal National Party opposition. And at that point, Peter Slipper was severely criticised, and he resigned from the Liberal National Party and became effectively an independent, a sitting member independent at that time. But he's also an independent who is somewhat, you know, on the side of the government. Obviously, because of what he's done, he's clearly indicated an alliance with the government. So this has created a situation where this has created in itself an instability. Now, while all that was going on, there was another undercurrent of a scandal that was developing in relation to the same man, Peter Slipper. And this was allegations of misuse of government privileges, such as taxi cab vouchers, and sexual harassment of staff. And the sexual harassment issues are quite severe indeed. It's believed that that he actually hired people to engage in sexual activities with one of his main staff members had said this and said that he was encountering severe harassment from Peter Slipper. And this all came out in a civil law complaint against Peter Slipper, which is now in the process of working its way through the courts. At the same time as that, the allegations of actual criminal misconduct have come forward. So Peter Slipper is now once again embroiled in a massive scandal. He's a sitting speaker. He's also a member of the Church of England, I believe, and he's actually a preacher. I'm not quite sure what the correct word is. I don't think preacher is the word. My brain is not functioning at the moment. But he's someone who conducts church services in the Church of England church here in Australia. So this has also created a whole lot of waves of questions about his integrity within the broader community. And he is now under strong pressure from within Parliament to step down as Speaker. Now, when he steps down as Speaker, which I believe will happen, this will create more instability for the government. A new Speaker will have to be appointed. The government will potentially lose another vote on the House of Parliament. We've got the carbon tax coming due in July, and there may well be a motion of no confidence passed in the government when Parliament resumes in about, I think, 2 or maybe just 1 week. Certainly in May, Parliament will be resuming. So we have a really electric situation developing in Australia. I'm Herewood Fenton. You're with Truth News Australia. Just going to break, and we'll be right back with more.
Getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Hi, welcome back to Truth News Radio. Today I'm going through some Australian news with you, some rather scurrilous material in relation to the Australian Parliament, and I also want to get into the large volume of stories I need to cover in relation to climate change and the carbon tax, which is coming in to Australia in July this year. So as I was saying before we went to break, the sitting speaker there, Peter Slipper, is today under extreme pressure to resign from his position, and I expect that will happen. That will mean a new speaker will need to be appointed. The government will lose even more of its slim majority in the House, and we may well see a motion of no confidence passed in the government in May when they return. Now, the timing there is absolutely crucial because, of course, there is a massive popular opposition to the carbon tax, and the carbon tax is due to go live in July this year. The government's popularity rating is currently sitting around 30%, and it quite often dips below that. It goes down to 27%. And I would be pretty sure if a poll was done right now, it would be below 30%. One of the main top reasons why the government is so unpopular is the carbon tax. There are a lot of other things. The whole tenor of this government has been full of incompetence, mismanagement, and dishonesty, going right back to the previous leader, Kevin Rudd, I should point out. And, of course, the government the current leader came into power as a result of a stab in the back of the previous leader, and it was done really suddenly and without any explanation that made any sense to anyone, because Kevin Rudd had actually been the leader who was elected, and he was slipping a little in the polls, but nowhere near to the level that Julia Gillard is currently at. And you know, the main reason he was slipping in the polls, ironically, is again because of the carbon tax. Although it wasn't called the carbon tax back then, it was called the ETS, the Emissions Trading Scheme. But you know, during 2009, in the lead up to the Copenhagen summit, Kevin Rudd had been preaching about this and saying it was the great moral challenge of our age. And you know, he went to Copenhagen, and Copenhagen was a big flop. They didn't agree to any binding commitments, and a lot of awareness then became focused on the inconsistencies in the official climate change position, with the leaking of the ClimateGate emails from East Anglia University in the UK. And some websites like Andrew Bolt's at the Sun Herald in Australia became, you know, really vociferous in their attacks on climate change and climate change policies. And you started getting a lot of members within the Liberal National Party becoming extremely critical of their own party's stance on it, which at that time had been supportive. Malcolm Turnbull, who had been the leader of the opposition at that time, was pro-ETS, but you know, his rank and file were totally against it. And it became clear with so many call-ins on talkback radio across the country that people across the country were against it. And there was actually a rebellion from within the Liberal Party. And towards the end, I think it was of 2010, the sitting leader of the Liberal National Party, Malcolm Turnbull, was overturned, was thrown out. And Tony Abbott, the current leader of the opposition, was appointed. And it was suggested and hinted that he was a climate change skeptic, although he never formally admitted to that. But indeed, many of his members and co-workers in the parliament are certainly climate change skeptics, such as Nick Minchin. Now, of course, this change of leadership from within the Liberal Party actually bolstered the support that the Liberal Party had within Australia. At the same time as that, the government was losing popularity and was, you know, fighting a losing battle trying to sell its emissions trading scheme. And as Kevin Rudd began to slip in the polls, suddenly what happened was he was himself deposed by Julia Gillard, who was then appointed the leader of the opposition. And this was rather surprising, but at the time it was sold to us as, well, you know, Kevin Rudd's policies weren't working too well. Julia Gillard is going to bring a new leadership. The emissions trading scheme is now scrapped. And of course, there was a brief resurgence in support for the Labour Party when it was announced that the emissions trading scheme was now scrapped, because that obviously had been one of the main reasons why Kevin Rudd was losing popularity. But then we saw very quickly that there was spin put on this, and the spin was put on it by the media and by the government itself. And the spin was, actually, Kevin Rudd was losing popularity because he didn't push through with his ETS strongly enough, and that the Copenhagen Accords had been so disappointing to the general masses that they'd lost faith in the government. You see, they actually spun it the other way around to suggest that we were all really unhappy with the government because they hadn't been able to secure a global carbon treaty. And, you know, we just felt that Kevin Rudd, you know, wasn't good enough and he wasn't going to save the planet. You know, he was like the Superman that was supposed to save the planet and he'd failed. That was really how it was spun. Insultingly moronic, insultingly condescending to the Australian people. And this type of spin was done by major media. It was done by the ABC. It was done by major commercial television networks and newspapers within the country. And this was actually just a softening up for the next phase, which was to call a new election. Because Julia Gillard said, well, we're going to have a new election. We're going to get a mandate from the masses to see whether, you know, you're happy with the new leadership. And before going into that election, in the month before that election, which was called not long after the leadership change, she announced proudly and stridently that there will be no carbon tax under a government I lead. And that was the strongest message from the government as they went into that election in 2010. And guess what? You know, Labor resurged a bit in its popularity. You had the polls were quite strong. Liberals were still, you know, gaining ground, but Labor still had a majority, although it was a slimmer one. Now, the elections occurred, and yes, Labor won, but I think they won with something like a 2 or 3 seat margin. And that's when things got really bad, because within about 2 weeks of them winning that election, the government turned around and completely reversed its position on there will be no carbon tax. In fact, they said, guess what? There will be a carbon tax. And this finally was the final slap in the face, the final insult to intelligent adult grown-up people in this country who've just been dragged along and treated with utter disrespect, treated like utter scum by their elected representatives. And guess what? Her popularity started dropping from that point onwards, and it's gone down, down, down. The government's popularity has gone down, down, down. As I said earlier, they've been down around 30% for the last 6 months, and they regularly drop down to 26-27%. And now we have a new scandal engulfing the government with this Peter Slipper scandal. We've also got the other one in relation to potential criminal misconduct of another sitting Labor member, Craig Thompson, who could also be forced to resign. This government is in mortal, it's at the end of its tether. Okay, they cannot survive. But the question is, will they go out before or after the carbon tax? Because that's the critical thing for us all. And that's all that I really care about. The government is bankrupt of any credibility. Unfortunately, the opposition is not to be trusted any more than the current government. As we've seen, previous leaders of the opposition have indicated that they would support a carbon trading scheme. So it's really not something that we can simply say, well, we'll just, you know, get get a change of government and fix it. But they are committed, and this is a central plank policy platform, that the opposition is committed to repealing the carbon tax, and we will hold them to that. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. I'm Harold Fenton. We'll be right back with more after the break. Please stay with us.
I will not go down under the ground, because somebody tells me that death's coming round. And I will not carry myself down to die. When I go to my grave, my head will be high. Let me die in my footsteps before I go down under the ground. There's been rumors of war and wars that have been. The meaning of life has been lost in the wind. And some people thinking that the end is close by. Instead of learning to live, they are learning to die. Let me die in my footsteps before I go down under the ground. I don't know if I'm smart, but I think I can see. When someone is pulling the wool over me. And if this war comes and death's all around, let me die on this land for I die underground. Let me die in my footsteps before I go down under the ground. There's always been people that have to cause fear. They've been talking about a war now for many long years. I've read all their statements and I've not said a word. But now, Lord God, let my poor voice be heard. Let me die in my footsteps before I go down under the ground. Let me drink from the waters.
Welcome back to Truth News Radio. It's really great to have your company today. I've got a large swathe of material that I'm trying to get through, and we've got an interview coming up in the second hour with Rochelle McCready to talk about ACTA and some new information she has dug up on that. And I want to continue where I left off there, talking about the crisis of the government and the carbon tax policy. Now, one thing that you need to bear in mind in Australia is that our media here, we're a fairly small country with a population of only around 25 million. And we've got a limited amount of media, but one of our biggest media arms is actually government owned. And it's called the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. And unfortunately, that media organisation has been engaging in shameless propaganda for climate change and the carbon tax, similar to what we've seen in many other countries. But in Australia, you know, it's really quite shocking the degree to which the public sentiment is able to be controlled by those who turn to the ABC. And, you know, a large proportion of Australians probably think that the ABC is the most unbiased and most trustworthy broadcaster to watch and to listen to. They have television, they have several television channels, they have numerous radio stations all around the country. So it's mainly television and radio. But, you know, they're really quite dominant in that area. We have a few other networks. We've got about three other major commercial networks. And unfortunately, the ABC has been using its position of authority and respectability to push the line that there is an unquestioning consensus that catastrophic man-made climate change is with us, is inevitable, and if we don't take radical action, that the world is going to end. And this is what they regularly put forth on their television programs and radio, and they virtually never give an airing to the many skeptical viewpoints from the scientific community. We have two very distinguished academics and scientists in this country who are profound skeptics of the climate change dogmas of the IPCC. One of them is Bob Carter. He's actually from the from a university, I believe the University of Townsville in Queensland, and he is a geologist. And we also have Professor Ian Plimer, who is also a geologist. One thing we have found in climate change is that the scientists who work within the strict field of climate change scientists do tend to all dance to the same tune, which is hardly surprising because all their funding and the tenure of their positions depends on their adherence to the man-made climate change caused by CO2 theory. That is what climate change science is actually dedicated to. So it's a bit of a circular argument to say that 90% or more climate change scientists agree with the IPCC's position on climate change. Those university departments, those academics are tied to that position by the very nature of their jobs. And many of them are actually part of activist movements, and this is heavily politicized with a lot of money flowing through to fund these positions within universities. But outside of that, in fields like atmospheric sciences and fields like geology, you have many, many skeptics. And of course, these are constantly discounted because they're not climate scientists. This is a little game that the media and the governments and the big corporations play to discount correct and very credible scientific skepticism. But if you're looking for some Australian skeptics, I do encourage you to take a look at the work of Professor Bob Carter and Professor Ian Plimer. Ian Plimer wrote a book called Heaven and Earth in 2009, I believe, and it is an absolute encyclopedic compendium of information on the climate, and it really just destroys the myths about anthropogenic climate change with just a barrage of facts. I mean, it's so well documented. Each page has like 10 or 20 references on it, and it's hard going. It's technical reading, but it is highly profitable and highly worth the effort. Now, just getting back to, as I was saying, the Australian media, the Australian ABC has really taken the lead in trying to shape public opinion on the questions of climate change. And tonight, as it happens, on Australian television, they will be recording a special show of Q&A, which is an audience participation show, which looks at major issues in society and government. And the title of the show will be I Can Change Your Mind on Climate. I Can Change Your Mind About Climate. And they will be doing a show, which is the audience show, but before that they will actually be playing a little mini documentary that they've made to try and, I guess, I don't know, brainwash us? Gee, maybe not, but that seems to be what it is. Anyway, I'm going to play the trailer from that documentary, which is currently on their website. You can't watch the documentary yet because it hasn't been released. I'm now going to play a little bit of the trailer and you can get a feel for it.
Already into the dangerous level of carbon dioxide, and it's going to increase
more. All of Australia is warming in every state over every season.
The Earth's climate is constantly changing, driven by a multitude of natural forces.
To be manageable, now threatens and out of.
But now, a new force is disrupting the climate system.
Sea ice melting, glaciers receding.
Humans are driving dangerous global warming.
Human activity has adversely affected our climate.
Or at least, that's what the world's scientists are telling us.
What do we want?
But back down on Earth, about half of all Australians don't believe climate change is man-made.
Carbon dioxide does not drive temperature.
While the other half believe the need for action is urgent.
We are the last line of defence for Mother Nature.
One of the things which I think has disconcerted a lot of people is the evangelical fervour of the climate change alarmists.
Climate change is real.
Is there a better way to resolve the conflict that's dividing our nation? We're taking environmental activist Anna Rose.
We've come together to release this statement calling for greater action on climate change, and we're calling for deep emission reduction targets.
And committed climate sceptic Nick Minchin.
One day the world will realise that carbon dioxide is more of a friend than an enemy.
Around the globe to meet their pick of the world's leading voices on climate change.
Ever in history has the CO2 levels been as high as they are now?
Not in the last million years.
111 countries, Gallup did a survey. The majority of the human race isn't afraid of global warming.
I'm not going to be engaging in point-to-point debate because he is known for making things up.
There's a lot at stake.
One thing that really pisses people like me off is this red herring that people like you raise, and it is part of the slander of the environmental movement.
They'll be trying to change each other's mind on the most important questions of our time. Is climate change happening?
There's no empirical evidence that we are driving dangerous global warming, no.
Are humans to blame?
Well, this is very clearly caused by humans.
And is it dangerous enough to change everything?
We're being asked to take a huge gamble because they want to change the whole industrial system. People like her have to acknowledge the reality that there are people who disagree with them. And just to ignore that or not engage with them, it's ostrich behaviour.
If Nick Minchin changed his mind on climate change and he did accept the science, it would be amazing.
I'll just leave it there. Now, my analysis of this documentary based on the trailer is that what they're actually doing is it's very sophisticated propaganda. It's from the playbook of the BBC, and it's a technique of shaping your opinion by giving you both sides, but making one side look just a little bit weaker and a little bit more stupid than the other side. And of course, they're basically running the argument that those who don't agree with climate change alarmism simply are ignorant of science or are in denial of science. So basically they're positioning the argument as science on the one hand and climate change deniers on the other hand. And of course, it's a completely false representation of the situation. And it's a great shame on the ABC, and it proves that the ABC has really no integrity from a journalistic point of view, that they would run that type of argument, because there is a vociferous scientific debate. There are many very qualified people who are well respected in science who don't agree with the formal positions of the IPCC and the government. And the ABCC could have canvassed that. They could have shown that there is actual scientific debate, but no, instead they want to just stereotype it and stigmatize those who oppose it. Anyway, we're going to break now. I'll be back after the break with Rochelle McCready, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. Please stay with us.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Truth News Radio Australia. We've been going through some audio material there from the ABC, which is actually a trailer for the program that they will be airing tonight on ABC television called I Can Change Your Mind on Climate. Now, as I was saying there just as we went to break, and I think I may have mistakenly said we were bringing Rochelle on in this segment. She's actually coming on at the beginning of the next segment. So I've just got a little bit more to get through in relation to Australian material here in Australian news. As I was saying, that the use of this concept that science is with the climate change believers, and that basically those who disagree with that are actually anti-science, is a major theme of the whole approach to climate change. So I do encourage you to have a listen to the show on the ABC, and you will possibly be able to glean some more from that. And there will be the audience participation section, which we will have at the same time. So now I just want to move on with some more Australian news. And I've got a couple of stories here. One in relation to Julian Assange. Now, as we know, Julian Assange is still in house arrest in the United Kingdom. And he's actually been under house arrest for more than a year now. And this is all over what appear to be completely trumped up allegations of really sexual misconduct. And they keep using the term rape, but in fact, there was no rape that occurred. It just seems to be a way of keeping him under wraps. The extent to which the global control grid has clamped down on him is illustrated in a something that occurred last week when his lawyer, Jennifer Robinson, who is an Australian lawyer, attempted to board a plane from flying from London to Sydney. And what actually happened was she was stopped from boarding the plane, and she was told that she could not board until she had been cleared by the Australian High Commission. Now, it turns out that she has been put on, and this is his lawyer, just a normal functioning, above board, normal lawyer representing Julian Assange. She has been put on the Department of Homeland Security no-fly list, which is really, we all thought, was just an American domestic list. But she is actually on that list. And this is incredible, but airlines around the world are now being told, and I think they're being told by their governments, I think the UK government is instructing airlines that they have to run the names of passengers against the US no-fly list. And if a match occurs, then that is flagged and the person may not be allowed to board. So the US no-fly list is becoming a global no-fly list. So just that fact in itself is extremely important, and everyone needs to understand the implications of that. That the Department of Homeland Security can put you on a list and you may be blocked from flying from London to Zurich, you know. Nothing even to do with the US. This was a flight from London to Sydney. That's an indication of where we're at with that degree of power and that degree of global control being allowed and acknowledged by our governments. Another interesting piece of news to point out in regard to Julian Assange is that he is actually now running a show on the RT television channel. That's RT out of Russia. Russia Today is the full name, what it used to be called. It's now just known as RT. And Julian has done two shows on RT. I've watched both of them, actually. And the first one was very good. The first one was an interview with the leader of the Hezbollah movement in Lebanon, and gets into some really interesting issues. And this man has actually not done a media interview for at least 6 years. the leader of the Hezbollah, which are a major supporter of Syria. And he puts forward some very strong arguments and some very really irrefutable arguments about the nature of the struggle there, the nature of the struggle of the Palestinian people, and the simple fact that that Israel is a state that was created at the expense of the Palestinians, and the Palestinians were occupied and thrown out of their lands, and that until that problem is addressed, there is going to be an ongoing war. Really, it's an unfinished war that can only really end with restoration of the rights of these people, and it is the Israeli regime, the Zionist Israeli regime, which is clearly the aggressor in this situation. And of course, in relation to Iran and in relation to Syria, it is quite clear that that Israel would like to see both of those countries neutralized and intends to take steps to do that. So worth having a look at the interview there with Julian Assange. It's quite... the first one was actually very good. The second one, I would say, was less good. But hopefully the show will evolve and continue to improve. Now, just moving on to another important subject for us at Truth News Radio, which is the issue of full body scanners. And I have a story here which just came out last week, which is that the Target department store is offering 3D body scanners to measure customers. Yes, folks, the Target department store, which is a well-known department store in Australia, is actually using 3D millimeter wave body scanners in a promotional deal to encourage customers to come in and get measured with the latest technology. And I have an article here which was published, and I don't even know where it was published. Let me just quickly get that up. It was published on, and I don't have the link, unfortunately. I didn't put it into the article. It was published on a major Australian media outlet. The national retailer is spending $1 million on the technology that will measure the dimensions of 20,000 men and women as part of a national survey to update their designs. Perth shoppers will be able to step into the scanner from May 25 to 29 in the company's Whitford's store. Target Managing Director Denny Rogers said customers were frustrated and confused by inconsistent sizing, and it was the main reason clothes were returned. By taking 60 seconds to come and be scanned, consumers will not only find out their exact measurements, they will be helping Target find out what size Australians really are today so that we can make clothes that really fit. Okay, well, this is an interesting turn of events, isn't it? I mean, this looks to me clearly like a propaganda exercise and a marketing exercise. Well, let's call it PR, but really PR and propaganda are very closely related, as Edward Bernays demonstrated in his book on the title. You know, this is actually a PR / propaganda exercise on the part of the manufacturers of the full body scanners. And they've said in the article here that they hope to get 20,000 people to walk through the scanner. Look, and actually in the photo you can see here, it's actually got the little Target logo on it, and they're making it look cute, and they're basically trying to make this thing look like a cute, fuzzy little, you know, nice thing that you can do. You know, it's like a something you can do with the kids, and we can all stand in the machine, and it's going to take these wonderful photos so that we can get measured correctly. Now, we know, of course, that the reason why these machines were invented, it was nothing to do with being tailoring for clothes. Because it's not, you know, that's not what the machines are about. The machines are a surveillance security system. They are an invasive system for determining what's inside someone's body. They've been used in prisons. They've been used at security checkpoints. Their real use has nothing to do with being fitted out for clothing. So this is really just a shameless exercise in promotion. And just quickly read to you from another story here that came out also this week, that sweaty armpits can trigger the airport scanners. In German trials, false alarms were recorded by sweaty armpits. And these are the same machines that are going to be used in Australian airports from July this year. So we are now going to break, and at the end of this break, we will be having Rochelle McCready on. Please stay with us. You're Truth News Radio Australia.